Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back in. It's the Lions 24/7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. He is Sean Fitz. Appreciate listening to us as always. Hopefully you have found our YouTube page by now. That channel is at Lions 24/7. Ready or not, folks, it is Ohio State week for Penn State, a game that looks much different than when we looked at it at the start of October as we close into Halloween weekend and the Big Ten title picture takes shape. Suddenly, Penn State really left out of that conversation, dropping 13 spots to number 20 in the AP Top 25 poll, following that 20-18 9 overtime loss to Illinois that we spent a lot of time, Sean, on Saturday breaking down. We're going to try our best not to rehash a lot of things. We're going to have to talk about a lot of the same things, though. It's just the way it is coming off of a loss like that. And as I said, it's Ohio State week, and I don't know if this team will be ready, but they've got to go to Columbus, and they've got to play football on Saturday against a Buckeyes squad that is now number 5 nationally and very much rolling right now.
We spent a lot of time breaking it down. We're going to spend the rest of our lives trying to forget it because that's how bad it was. And this is one that's going to stick with a lot of people for a long time. Fans are going to remember, they're going to put it in the 6-4 category because, you know, you can remember some stinkers that Penn State has played over the past couple of years. I think the Army game a couple of years ago and, you know, just a couple of just like, you know, menial games in the early in the schedule, but they managed to pull through and win. This one is just going to stick because it was every bit as bad. And maybe some of that goes away if you win in overtime, but it's just not, it's going to be one that just hangs around for a long time. And you've got a lot of different levels that are playing up to that. And it's really disappointing. And again, do recommend you check out the post-game podcast. Maybe not as in-depth analytical, but I think some people, and they tweeted us and we appreciate your feedback that appreciated the candor after the game and kind of wondering what's left for Penn State now. So check out the post game podcast. We'll have a couple more episodes for you this week, but it's Ohio State week. And you mentioned it looked a lot different at the start of October. It looked a lot different a week ago today or even 5 days ago. So yes. It's going to probably be a long week for Penn State in terms of preparation for the Buckeyes.
It's going to be a long week for James Franklin, for this team. As I said, this is about as much as adversity. And that's saying a lot. They were 0-5 last year. Let's not forget what we witnessed last season and how that took shape and just was an absolute calamity in a lot of ways. But right now, this team where they are coming off the loss to Illinois and now looking ahead at the schedule, 3 of their next 5 opponents, Sean, are inside the top 10 AP poll rankings as things stand right now. So you think, okay, if things don't stop trending the way they have, what is the final record for this Penn State team, and what does that mean for James Franklin? Now, without getting too far down that road, we have a big picture question about the trajectory of this program coming later. But, Sean, just coming off of the Illinois game, we get on these post-game podcasts, and it's a little bit more reactionary because we're just fresh off of seeing it, and we have a lot of questions, and we haven't had any media availability. There has been nothing from James Franklin, nothing from players, nothing on the record since Saturday. But there's been some time to dig a little bit deeper into the numbers, and they are just uglier and uglier the more you kind of go layer by layer through what happened during those 4 hours in Beaver Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, there's the ones that are going to jump out to you that are obvious, like the 350-plus rushing yards by Illinois, you know, the numbers for Sean Clifford. Those are the ones you're going to lean on. But when you take a deeper look at it, it's not any prettier whatsoever. It's not like you can find the silver lining in this game. Penn State was a better team. Illinois came out and put it to them. And that's really the disappointing part of it. You know, you look at, you got 3 takeaways, 3 points off of those 3 takeaways. 10-point holding Illinois to 10 points should be more than enough. You know, you could have argued that if you told anybody before the game, 10 points. Yeah, Penn State's going to win whatever to 10 and be fine with it. It's tough. I mean, you look back at the tape and it's painfully obvious that if Sean Clifford can't run, this offense can't function because you're asking Sean Clifford to stand back there and be an accurate quarterback. And that's just not what he is. And, you know, he makes a lot of those plays moving around in the pocket, getting on the move, picking up 9 yards on a third and six or something of that nature. And you take that out of the offense and you've got nothing. And that's really disappointing. And I think the disappointing part is you knew that coming in. You schemed around it. You ran six out of your first seven plays were on the ground and couldn't really do anything about it. And when you asked him to throw, you opened him up a little bit and think good things happen. And so you knew that was coming in. You thought you could trust your ground game a little. We talked about that after the game. That just completely evaporated and you have no trust in that whatsoever. And going on the road to a situation like Ohio State, who does have a dominant running game, you're kind of scared of how that's going to take shape. So, you know, it's been tough to handle. You take this game and you say Penn State's at a crossroads, but, you know, I'm going to bring some Jersey into it for you. It's more like a roundabout. I mean, there's several different ways that this could go. There's several different layers at play here. You talk about James Franklin being rumored for jobs at LSU and USC. You know, after that game, that a lot of that leverage goes out the window. I mean, you look at what, if you just take it frame by frame here, okay, you're LSU and you're USC. Now you have to justify, if you're going to put James Franklin high on your list, you have to justify that coming off that game. If you're James Franklin, you're trying to negotiate with Penn State and trying to figure out what is the best for yourself if you're staying at Penn State. And all of a sudden you lose a lot of leverage. You lose a lot of faith in the Letterman, faith in donors and things like that, just off of one game. And that's kind of where you see yourself right now. So it's a big old pile of mud right there. And it's probably worse than mud, but you're just kind of stuck in one spot. And for Franklin, for the program, who obviously these players are hearing his name tossed out and about, that's a tough one to go through. And now you got to rebound and play the number five team in the country, who is probably going to be a playoff team if they you know, continue to do what they're doing. That's not a situation anybody wants to be in. So just at every level, you're in it deep, and that's not a great place to be. And some teams play great with their back against the walls. Other teams can completely implode. And you look at that schedule, and not only do you face top 10 team in Michigan, go on the road, top 10 team at Michigan State, which, you know, somebody's going to take care of that this weekend. And one of those teams is going to fall out, but you also go on the road to Maryland, which every year should be a win. But as you saw last year, not necessarily the case. So really just a bunch of spokes on this wheel right now. And I'm not certain that all those are pointing in the right direction.
You make a tremendous point there. And it's one that, Josh Pate, I'm sure would hammer this home for us as well. USC and LSU, they need to hire a guy that, is the Pied Piper coming into this situation. One, they're going to be spending a ton of money. Whoever they bring in, it's going to be a huge paycheck sign. Then you're talking about USC, which it has been some time, but they had a dynasty going, 15 years ago, but that's not that long in the grand scheme. And USC thinks they should be in that position all the time out there in the Pac-12. And then LSU won a national title 2 years ago. So if James Franklin right now is the guy you're trumpeting as the Pied Piper for your program and the guy who's going to get you back to where you want to be, you think it's going to take long for Tigers and Trojans fans and for the national media and the loudest voices in college football to completely derail any perception of good vibes that would come from that move as things stand right now? I mean, it feels like James Franklin's almost got to go to Columbus and beat the Buckeyes to kind of get himself back to some kind of even keel standing after what he's lost in the last seven quarters.
Yeah, that shine has really worn off from the national standpoint and from the Penn State standpoint as well. I mean, fans not happy, obviously. You go out there and, I mean, it's amazing what a game like that can do to you. And you got to try and turn it around somehow. And this is not the optimal way to do that, by going to Columbus and playing a great team at night. So, you can fall back on Penn State's done a nice job and played Ohio State better than any team in the Big Ten. But at the same time, Trevion Henderson's over there running for 200 yards a week after Chase Brown and McCray, the freshman, I forget his first name, diced your defense, and you don't have your best defensive tackle. So that's it's pretty bleak, not going to lie. I hope we haven't lost our listeners by now.
Stay with us. We got recruiting coming up. We got recruiting coming up on the show. Stay with us.
We do. And James Franklin has recruiting. He's got the number three class in the country, I think it is, maybe four class in the country right now. So that's a bargaining chip that he does have going for him right now. And, you know, you got to keep those guys on the straight and narrow. We talked a little bit on Saturday after the game. Jordan Allen no longer in the class. He made that official earlier today. But before we get back into recruiting, I mean, you just look at this loss and you wonder how far can those waves go? I mean, how far can this ripple effect impact the entire Penn State program?
Everything is magnified right now, and moments are magnified in retrospect, especially when there was that much football played and such a strange scenario played out there with the new format for overtime, which drew a lot of opinions. But I think, you know, the Jaquan Brisker dropped interception, the Ellis Brooks missed opportunity in the same department, and then obviously 350 plus rushing yards on the ground are going to be a bunch of red flags that people raise to and point to and say, how did this happen? But let's face it. I mean, with that said, 350 plus rushing yards, it was the third most ever allowed by Penn State. They still had three takeaways. They surrendered 38 passing yards. They surrendered 10 points in regulation while giving up 350 plus rushing yards. 10 points. And you add Jordan Stout's punting, which again was very on point on Saturday. That needs to be enough. That needs to be more than enough when you're playing a 2-5 Illinois team with the offensive personnel that you have, with the recruiting that you've done at key positions on the offensive line, at tight end, at running back, at receiver, with the receiver you had leading the way in Jahan Dotson. And then you look at this quarterback room, which we've talked about since last January and last February, about where are the supplemental pieces? Where are the reinforcements? They never showed up. That is where we are right now, and I think it's clear. You start with the quarterback room, but collectively, the offensive implosion has absolutely torpedoed what looked like it could have been a very special season, and it has put this defense on its heels every step of the way while that defense lost one of its primary components in P.J. Mustipher.
And again, this is kind of rehashing what we said in the post game, but that defense, as many things as they do have to fix, and that's, you can admit that, had them where they needed to be to win that game. On the flip side, offensively, just painful to watch, painful to follow along as well. James Franklin said after the game on Saturday that Sean Clifford, and obviously, you know, injury hampered Sean Clifford, gave them the best chance to win. The worst part about that is I think I believe him.
I do too.
Yeah, I think that, and that's an indictment on your quarterback room and the way that you've recruited the position, no doubt. But I think I believe him in terms of what that's doing. And that's gonna cap your ceiling for the rest of the season if Sean Clifford can't be the guy that runs around and makes plays and you know, is the running threat and really probably your most efficient runner this season. So that's probably the one that hurts the most, is you're looking at that quarterback room and wondering what's going. You look at the future, and obviously Bo Prabula and Drew Aller out there, you know, have you feeling hopeful, but you got to get there. And that's the thing. You're not going to win any games with Drew Aller and Bo Prabula in the 2021 season.
Yeah, that's a topic to discuss in January, and that'll be one that Penn State can't wait to get to in terms of a personnel upgrade, you'd imagine. But right now, they have what they have, and they have five games to figure out how to get it done starting this Saturday against Ohio State. And Sean, I do want to reiterate this. That one more point on the defense. They let the Illini reach the end zone twice on 9 overtime sessions. 7 of those started at the 3-yard line. They let them in twice. I mean, there were so many opportunities where they passed that baton to Penn State's offense and said, figure it out, get the end zone, get the win. Let's get the hell out of here with a W, go to Columbus and figure out what we did wrong today. And it just didn't get done by the offense. And here's some pretty painful stats from ESPN. If you haven't had enough pain from the podcast, these just stood out to me. Read through these a little bit earlier in the week. Two teams have had fewer passing yards than Illinois did in a top 10 upset win during the last 15 years. Penn State is the first team in the last 10 years to win a turnover battle by 3 or more and limit their opponent to less than 2 yards per pass attempt and still lose. We're talking about a decade of college football. And then here's a big one. According to Caesar Sportsbook, Penn State closed at 25.5 point favorite going into the matchup. We both predicted they would cover based on our points spread predictions. Since the FCS and FBS split in 1978, only one other time has Penn State lost as a 20-plus point favorite. That was last year at home as well against Maryland.
Yeah, that's fine. And you say 25 points and a half, that means I beat them because I had them at 25. So
there you go.
Big check for me there.
Nice work.
Yeah, thanks. Silver linings here is what we do. there's really no excuses for that. You can look back and talk about the missed opportunities and everything like that. But when it comes like that, when it comes to a team at the bottom of the Big Ten physically putting it to you, you know, that's where you got to, you know, kind of draw the line, especially as a program that's prided itself over the years of being tougher than the other team. And now all of a sudden that's not the case. And I don't think this is time for the conversation about going to shotgun and fullback and all that kind of stuff, because that's kind of irrelevant at this point. But, you know, the guys in that building, not just the coaching staff, have to take it upon themselves. We've been talking so much about Franklin and Yurcich and Brent Pry, but players got to take it upon themselves at some point. You wonder if the distractions were just too much. I mean, you had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. Maybe you're looking ahead to the Buckeyes. Maybe you're looking at preparing for stopping Trevion Henderson instead of stopping Chase Brown. And that's what happens. So I think the players deserve a fair share of credit when they win, a fair share of criticism when they go out and play like this. So, you know, you hope everyone's healthy coming out of that. I have my doubts. You know, I was watching the game the other day, and you know, Caden Wallace, I don't think was able to lift one of his arms at one point, and that's you know, that's big for an offensive tackle. So, you know, as good as this team looked at points during the season, you still had worries about its depth, but that was mostly on the front seven on defense, that linebacker spot. You know, you're just wondering if those guys, those young guys that we've talked about before, can take a step up and maybe make an impact on the offensive line, at defensive tackle with Izzard and Ellis and, you know, work some of those other guys in there. But you're not going to do that unless you build these leads and get these guys reps and get these guys out there, because you don't want to put them out in a situation that's kind of a no-win situation.
Well, rep building season, I think, is just about done for this squad right now in 2021. If you're looking for opportunities in games to get reps, I think you're going to have to get guys involved when the game still matters. Because to this point, I look ahead of the schedule. Maybe my alma mater fits the bill as a team they could pile up some points on, but I'm not really giving them the benefit of the doubt in any of these matchups right now. So what they've got.
Thank you, by the way, for saying that much better than I do. The rep building season being over is what I was trying to get at.
Yeah.
And you swooped in and you nailed that one. So I appreciate that.
And I do want to go back to something you said, because you talk about motivated players spending 2 weeks hearing about what happened at Iowa, probably feeling very disrespected, feeling like you missed a great opportunity and feeling like you didn't have a full shot at that because Sean Clifford was sidelined. And then you come out and you play this way against Illinois, and there's a lot that falls on the staff's feet here, and we're going to talk about that and continue to talk about that as this week goes on. But, yeah, from a motivation standpoint, this is an Illinois team. We spent a big chunk last week of breaking down the Illini. They got called out by their head coach. He's saying, you know, people that are bringing in the last few years aren't going to be good enough to play as a two-deep member moving forward, all this kind of stuff. They were shut out at Wisconsin 24-0. So they come in and all of a sudden they have more motivation than Penn State. And I mean, they did play very hard, but they were really, really poor in key areas, starting at the quarterback position. And they were ripe for the picking here. Even if you played some of your worst football that you have played under the James Franklin era, there were at least 9, 10, 11 opportunities in this game. I think you can count them up from the fourth quarter through all these overtime sessions where Penn State still manages to escape defeat and despite itself end up at 6-1, and they still couldn't get that done. And Sean, I think offensively, I mean, where else can you start the conversation? Some other numbers I put together, I didn't have help from ESPN on this one, but I went through some box scores the last couple of weeks. Sean Clifford, since he exited the game against Iowa, here's what Penn State's offense has done over those last almost 7 entire quarters. I did not include overtime in these because that's not real football. So 3 scoring drives in regulation, 1 field goal that required 0 yards gained offensively. That was this past game where you got a defensive turnover, got a field goal after the offense did nothing with that turnover. Clifford last week on that touchdown drive, which is the only touchdown drive they have since he was hurt against Iowa, he was 3-for-3 for 87 yards through the air with a touchdown. Otherwise, over those 7 quarters, Penn State, 22 of 51 combined passing, 91 passing yards, two interceptions. You've seen no real quarterback rush threat from either Clifford or Taquan Roberson. Roberson had a 10-yard gain against Illinois. Clifford was a complete non-factor with his feet and turned away from several opportunities to make something happen as a runner against Illinois. Penn State went 60-plus minutes of football between these two games without converting a single third down. The longest play that didn't involve Sean Clifford throwing the ball in these two games in those seven quarters, an 18-yard run this past Saturday by John Lovett. Beyond that, the next longest that didn't involve Sean Clifford throwing the ball, 12-yard run for Kevon Lee and a 12-yard reception for Cam Sullivan Brown from Taquan Roberson. I didn't mention the name Jahan Dotson in there. That is a huge issue. Again, we're talking about just a complete collapse here, Sean. It's just really hard to wrap my head around. Even as I'm reading the stats that I wrote myself, still trying to figure out how it got to this low point in such a hurry.
I don't know, man. That was pretty brutal right there.
I'm sorry, but those are the numbers. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the numbers tell a lot there, and you know, numbers can be misleading sometimes. I think these are right on the money. So, yeah. One quick comment. You did say that Roberson had a 10-yard game against Illinois. It was Iowa, obviously.
Iowa, yeah.
But it was that doesn't make it. That doesn't change anything. But no, it's the same thing. Yeah, you know, I go back to what I said earlier in the episode. You don't have that running threat from Sean Clifford, you don't have much, because he's sitting back there and trying to pick you apart, and that's not the quarterback that he is. Then again, you don't have anything at all from the rest of your quarterback room. That's a scary situation. I mean, we were just we're just a few days removed from talking about getting those two young guys reps, because you should be able to go out and, you know, put it to Illinois and do some things that that you haven't been able to do in a couple of weeks. And that's you know, perhaps oversight by us, but I'll be honest with you, Jeremy Werner was right on board with us. I mean, he thought this was going to be a fairly comfortable win for Penn State as well. So
he nailed it on the Illini quarterbacks. He nailed it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no offense to Jeremy, it didn't take much to pull up that scouting report. But the run game was solid. Defense was solid. I think Penn State was surprised about how physical they were. And as you saw, it was a sleepy Sunday, or excuse me, a sleepy Saturday in State College, a rainy Saturday, and it played like they were hungover from the bye, and that's kind of how it worked.
Illinois went big with the offensive personnel. Penn State did not have the response. They were without P.J. Mustipher, which is a huge gut punch, and that's exactly what you saw Illinois delivering, was gut punch after gut punch. It felt like 7-8 yards on every attempt, whether it was one running back or the other. Now, you mentioned this on the postgame podcast. Illinois, for whatever reason, flipped their script, started to really rely on quarterback play in overtime, which played into Penn State's hand, I thought, and the late fourth quarter as well. But, I mean, Sean, you're going up. You mentioned Travion Henderson, what he's doing already. People are questioning whether he's the best running back in college football, what, 6-7 games into his freshman year at Ohio State. We just saw Illinois do that. They do not have blue-chip talent up front. In fact, Bielema was trying to distance himself from this offensive line 5-6 days ago. So that is a terrible equation that sets up in Columbus.
Yeah, and Ohio State, the last couple times Penn State has played them, has come out aggressive and gone right after them. And I think that that's something that, you know, maybe Illinois has picked up from those Penn State films against Ohio State. You go right at them, especially without a guy like PJ Mustipher, you're going to have issues. And again, big week for the linebackers. They were not good against Illinois, not filling, you know, sealing back and filling those backside gaps, and tackling was all over the place. Very, very poor. It was interesting because there was a lot of, you know, we think about those runs, those big chunk runs that Illinois was able to put together. A bunch of times Penn State had the Illinois back in the backfield, and they, you know, to their credit, finished some of those plays, had some tackles for loss and things like that, or tackles for no gain. But really, it's just it was tough to watch, taking it off the left side, all of a sudden slipping past an arm tackle or two, and he's down the field for 17 yards. It just happened way too often, and for an offensive line that was not very good for the rest of the season. You look at what they did against Wisconsin. Wisconsin's got a, you know, as we said in the start of the year, the front seven is not the problem there. And the front seven from Wisconsin put it to Illinois, and Illinois turned the tables and put it to Penn State's front seven.
Can I talk about the Penn State quarterback situation real quick?
No, we're good.
Well, I got one more thing, man, because look, let's be real. If it is what it is, and Sean Clifford's good enough, healthy enough to play right now, but he is as healthy as we saw last week, and essentially you're getting, I don't know, a guy that's not going to make mistakes, that's not going to be the quarterback on the field when eight pre-snap penalties happen, but he's not creating. And you didn't see Taquan Roberson creating. And this offense requires a creator at quarterback. So if you don't have Clifford as the creator, you have more Clifford, the guy who's not going to turn the ball over, and maybe you can put some drop possessions together. And if you don't have Taquan Roberson, who's a creator, is there anybody else that steps up there? And if those are your two options, I mean, do you have to go Sean Clifford in this situation in Columbus? And I guess the other question is, can you go with him? Is he medically okay to do that? What are you jeopardizing by playing him? There's just a lot involved in this conversation, and I can't find a solution that leads me to believe anything will be improved at the quarterback position for Penn State in this matchup.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you, and that's twofold. I don't have an answer because I don't know what the correct course of action is with Clifford's health, and I don't have an answer because outside of Clifford, you don't know anything about this quarterback room except that you don't want them going into Ohio State making their first start. So I wish I could fill you in with a little bit more color on that, but that's kind of where they are right now, and kind of played a dangerous game with just having those three scholarship quarterbacks. And beyond having those three scholarship quarterbacks, obviously only one was ready to go in the big time. So that's tough sledding there for Penn State. And they've ran into a kind of a worst case scenario with Clifford getting hurt at Iowa, and it's going to continue to have a ripple effect on the rest of the schedule.
Talk about a dangerous game. We're talking about Penn State reconfiguring its offensive line during the second half of game number 7 out of desperation. Now you're going to play Ohio State, where there are freaks across the field from you. Man, I mean, we saw Drew Scruggs end up at center for this game. We've seen Eric Wilson come off the field at times. We've seen Bryce Effner involved at times. We saw Miranda at right guard. We know that Caden Wallace was a heck of a guard prospect, the guy who practiced at guard for Penn State some early in his career, but he's played all tackle since he got to campus at that right tackle position. I'm just not sure where Phil Troutwine mixes the guys, and how you do that while also competing against Ohio State and then eventually Michigan and then against Michigan State. How does it not continue to go down the slippery slope here? How do they hit the brakes? I know this is one you don't have the answer for, but if they don't get this one answered, or at least find several Band-Aids and apply them to the situation, this is probably the ultimate death of the 2021 Penn State football season, will be the inability for the offensive line to develop anything of significance. Let's face it, they have not moved guys around. There has not been a lot of help from the tight end unit. There has not been a lot of flash and burst to overcome that from the running back room. And now you don't have a dual threat quarterback in play. It just spells doom, and I don't know how to avoid it.
I don't either, man. Miranda has been, you know, he was second team all Big Ten by the coaches last year.
He was.
I mean, that's not this year. I don't know what the problems have been. I don't know. This is a guy that we've said, you know, his ceiling not as high as his floor. That doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean when I say that, where, you know, eventually things are going to catch up to him physically. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. You know, I like Scruggs at center. This guy has some work to do. Obviously, he hasn't had a ton of reps there or anything like that. But, you know, I think he kind of sets the table for the next couple of years as a center prospect. So go with that. But, yeah, guard, you know, not strong enough, not athletic enough. You know, Eric Wilson doing what he can in there. But I just, you know, I think he might be in over his head a little bit, kind of like Miranda in terms of athletic, you know, ability and, you know, the short arms and things like that. When you're playing a team like Ohio State, that's going to bring, as you said, freaks up front across from you. And they've had their issues on defense, no doubt about it. But at the same time, you know, that's a matchup that you also favor the Buckeyes. So I'm going to see how they play around. Going to see how Bryce Effner fits in. He played some decent snaps. He was kind of a sixth offensive lineman. And, you know, when your tight ends are not blocking like you hope that they would, then all of a sudden you've got to bring in a sixth offensive lineman to try and get that done. So, a critical situation. Phil Troutwine's not in a good spot right now. And, you know, you have to question how that coaching job is going as well. So really tough, man. And you just keep throwing these questions up to me. I don't have answers for you, except that it doesn't look great.
Okay. Tight end room. Let's go. Speaking of a coach that probably starting to feel some pressure, certainly to get things moving in the right direction. We talked about the inability for this positional unit to consistently bring it as blockers. And there have been some crucial whiffs along the way. I also checked the stat sheet as receivers, because that's one spot you thought you could hang your hat on with this group, would be production in the passing game. Look, it's been a total plummet for this passing production in the last two games, Sean. But you've got to go all the way back. Yeah, you've got to go all the way back to September 18th, that whiteout game against Auburn. The only time any Penn State tight end has caught more than two passes in a game this season, Brenton Strange caught four passes for 71 yards and a touchdown against Auburn. Since then, one catch. He had two catches for 24 yards against Illinois. He had a crucial drop against Iowa, a couple actually, when they were trying to muster anything, any kind of momentum to stay on the field with Taquan Roberson. We know Theo Johnson had a vital drop against Illinois. He has had some big plays where 20-plus yard gains and I believe the first three games, and he added another against Indiana. But you look at the last couple of weeks, one catch, 1 yard for Theo Johnson and a big drop. And then Tyler Warren, no receptions going back to the Auburn game. That he's been in that Wildcat formation. We've seen him score a couple of touchdowns earlier in the year, converted a big fourth down. I was surprised we didn't maybe see him involved for one of those two-point conversion scenarios last Saturday. Didn't happen, and he hasn't been an impact player as a receiver to this point. So there's just a whole lot of what happened for me at tight end when I look through those numbers.
You mean as a Wildcat quarterback, because he did throw the pass to Sean Clifford that did not get
right. What did I say?
So just that he wasn't involved. So
two touches as a Wildcat QB, one fourth down pickup, and then the throw to Clifford. Yep.
Yeah. So that's kind of where you're at with there. I mean, you think about it, just a game of inches, a catch by Brenton Strange. And you know, that's one where you probably can't play the what if game, but that drop by Brenton Strange on third down against Iowa, maybe that's the one that gets you where you need to be and runs more of that clock off and get your defense off the hook at least. And then that Theo Johnson one against Illinois, that's a touchdown. I mean, that's one where he's more bigger, stronger, and faster than the guys that are chasing him. He's probably going to get to the end zone, and all of a sudden you're looking at different outcomes in both of those games. So when you look at what Penn State has had at the tight end position over the last couple of years, Pat would make those catches. Pat would, you know, he was so reliable, and these guys, as talented as they are, as athletic as they are, have not proven to be the reliable targets that the guy that preceded them has been. So you ask them to take a step this year, and there's a strong argument that has not happened.
Noah Cain, Sean, is under 3 yards per carry since week one. He remains the guy who gets the bulk of work.
We're just doing the same thing over and over again, aren't we? Just the tight ends to the running backs. They're not up to expectations, obviously. No. You know, Bill Connolly had something today where he was dead wrong about the running game as well. But the worst part is you've seen glimpses from these guys. And that's the thing. You see a different back when Kevon Lee's out there. You see a different back when Noah Cain is out there. And he just, you know, Noah Cain at least has the injury, you know, to help, I don't want to say help him out, but the injury kind of, you know, gives him a little bit of slack. But just this running game in general, you've seen it work before. And now with the coordinator change, it's just not there.
Between the tight end room and the running back room, there are 8 former 4-star prospects in 24/7 Sports composite rankings. Right now, you're just not getting what you thought you could. And certainly quarterback play right now, very detrimental to the entire process. But that's where it is offensively. And I think defensively, the situation is they've been getting taxed by snaps since week one. They had some opportunities in non-conference play and against Indiana to get some breathers. But you go back to that Wisconsin game, they're playing 90 snaps right in that ballpark. Illinois completely dominated time of possession. Iowa dominated time of possession after Clifford goes down. And along the way, you say goodbye to P.J. Mustipher. You never had Adisa Isaac. You never had Akeem Beeman. So you combine a group that's getting thinner up front with a group that's getting taxed by snaps and a schedule that's only going to get more difficult in the trenches. That's where it is on defense. I still really love the way the defensive backfield is playing. They have missed some key opportunities to come away with interceptions. That is really glaring. There's no doubt about it. But I think overall, you love the way they're handling themselves at the back end of this defense. But it won't really matter. I mean, if Ohio State is able to set the tone on the ground, and we've seen them do that a couple years ago with J.K. Dobbins up in Columbus, if Penn State can't respond there, it won't really matter what those defensive backs can do and how good they are back there.
Well, your defensive problems are offensive problems, aren't they? I mean, you can't get off the field. You can't prolong a couple of drives, and all of a sudden your defense is playing, 90 snaps against Wisconsin, and that's going to wear on you throughout the season. Did it against Iowa, and, you know, you just can't – if you can't prolong drives, you're leaving guys out and kind of hanging guys out to dry. I mean, we watched the other night Derek Tangelo, you know, calling for somebody to come in, and with the depth that they have, or the lack of depth that they have on the defensive line in that front seven, you just don't have anybody to take over for them. So that's an issue in itself. But at the same time, your defense is playing far too many snaps. I mean, it's really kind of starting to catch up with those frontline guys. I mean, just imagine where Penn State would be without Tangelo and without Ebikiti right now, because it's like, just it's terrifying to think about. Now, some of those guys, to their credit, have stepped up and played well. I think Ellis has played fairly well. I expected to see a little bit more of him than Kaziah Izzard. You're wondering if Ellis is still banged up from that Iowa game, but Luketta's played well. Tar Burton's been solid enough. Ebikiti kind of got exposed in the run game a little bit. They went kind of right after him on Saturday, Illinois did. But yeah, you're running out of bodies there, running out of guys that, you know, can function and give you the best that your defensive line needs. When you've got a gap between 1 through 3 and then 4 to 6, you see that show up when a guy like Smith Vilbert goes in there, and, you know, you're kind of playing in a curve right then. So, and then you move back, defensively to the linebackers and, you know, that there's only so many plays that those guys are going to have to make, are going to be able to make. And, you know, you saw it. You could say the same thing about the secondary, not so much against Illinois, but against Iowa. Those reps keep coming and coming and coming. Something's got to give at some point. Somebody's going to slip or something like that. So really a tough spot to be in. But, yeah, you can talk all you want about how the defense gave up 350-plus rushing yards, but that's a product of the environment that they've been put in the last 2 weeks. And 10 points, as we said, should be enough to win it. And, that's just going to be what they have to deal with probably the rest of the season.
I tossed this line out during the postgame podcast. I'll do it again here to reiterate the point you just made. 18 Penn State possessions starting in the second, third, or fourth quarter the last 2 weeks, 11 of them lasted fewer than 5 plays. That is a very short amount of time repeatedly for your defense to come to the sideline, regroup, get their legs underneath them, get some oxygen in those lungs. I mean, that's asking a lot. And as we said, guys are going down, and that gets harder and harder to accomplish. Sean, Ohio State's facing them, staring them in the face. We're going to talk about the Buckeyes more later this week. We'll bring on an analyst who covers Ohio State on a daily basis to get a better understanding of what this challenge looks like. Clearly, it's been a major challenge. You said it. Buckeyes have been probably played tougher on a consistent basis against Penn State than any other Big Ten opponent of late. But it's a 6-1 record for Ohio State against James Franklin at the end of the day. And that has been a huge, huge issue for Penn State. Certainly more issues piling on here right now ahead of the matchup. Recruiting, you mentioned Jordan Allen officially out. You said that was coming on Saturday as he was at Ole Miss during the weekend. We know how Penn State staff views those kind of visits post-commitment. We talked about bringing a tight end on board in 2023. I'm just going to throw it to you here. What do you got for recruiting?
Important distinction, and I know that not everybody works like this, and because Jordan Allen put it out this morning on Monday morning, this is one that was in motion well before the game. You know, this wasn't a situation where you looked at the game and see the fallout and say this guy was bailing after that. So don't take that. Don't take that bait and go with it. Penn State's going to have to do some selling in terms of the guys that they do have on board, who all seem pretty solid in themselves. But, you know, guys further away, Jordan Allen was a guy that we, you know, earmarked late last week. I think it was Friday morning. We found out that there was an Ole Miss official visit scheduled. Penn State staff found out by reading Steve Wilfong's column on 24/7 Sports that's going to happen. That's not how you go about that. You know, there's obviously the policy that they don't want anybody visiting anywhere else, but it goes to another level when you don't tell them that you have plans to visit to another school. So, thought that visit was off, and that was not the case, and took care of itself. And that's where you're at. Penn State, of course, tight end scholarships to begin with. So, you know, if you're going to lose somebody, the corner from Louisiana, it's only been on campus one time, is probably a logical place to start, but you're gonna have to continue to see what you've got for the 2022 class. Obviously, still want to bring in a linebacker like Jay Sean Barham. Still looking at Taylor Stubblefield was down, seeing Andre Green. I think Penn State's pretty much out of that one, but for the most part, they're still trying at least. And then there's a couple other guys that they're after. Be interesting to me. The most interesting thing to me about the Allen thing is you don't necessarily have to replace it with a corner. You don't have to necessarily bring in a defensive back. Allen, I think some projected at safety, some projected at corner. Penn State had him as a corner. But I think this probably gives you a little bit more wiggle room in the transfer market. And that's probably where you, if you're looking at the roster buildup and the roster makeup and things like that, I think that's probably where you can benefit from it the most. I think if I'm calling the shots, and clearly, very clearly I'm not, that's where I go with it, is to try and figure out something you know, up front on both sides of the, on either side of the ball, and go from there. So you look at that and you probably, it's more of an 85 play than the current class, see how that works. But I think it's going to give them a little bit more leeway in the transfer market.
And Penn State addressed the cornerback position twice in the transfer market last offseason. And of course, you got Tariq Castro Fields as the super senior. He's going to move on. And just going to say it, third year freshman Joey Porter is NFL draft eligible. So keep that in mind as well. Sean, our five-star mailbag question leads us right back to recruiting. And it's a very fair question at this stage. Penn State has been on a roll with recruiting, even after a rough 2020 season. If things continue to go badly for the remainder of 2021, could it realistically ruin recruiting plans? And we've said this a lot. Penn State built this number one ranked recruiting class without going and on the field after a 4-5 season. That said a lot. Now they got another storm to weather, especially if they pick up loss number 3 in a row on Saturday. I'm not saying it's going to ruin recruiting plans, but it is difficult to ignore when the on-field product starts to slide and you're 2 months out of National Signing Day with a group like this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Vultures, they're going to be circling, or the Sharks or whatever you would want to call them at some point, is going to be calling, trying to call up Penn State recruits and say, this is what's happening. You can bet that the Franklin stuff is being leveraged against them. I know I've talked to some commits that have said, you know, other schools have mentioned that he's going to be out of there. So you've got that working against you. That's the thing that could realistically ruin your recruiting plans, yeah, right there. As if he leaves, because you can always spin it. I mean, you can always turn it around and say, you're the missing piece. You're going to play early. Look at what is out there. You look at the receivers that are out there. You're only playing 3 receivers right now. So you've got an opportunity as a freshman to come in and play. So there are ways to shine that thing up and make it look a lot better for these kids that are coming in. So I don't really see a big fallout or anything like that. And you've got to get to the finish line. Obviously the first signing day is huge for Penn State. So you've got to get there. If Franklin is still on board and ready to go 100%, then I think you'll be okay. But at the end of the day, that's the thing that could sink it, is if there's a coaching change, which is not deep insight or anything like that. And I'm not saying that Franklin's staying, going, whatever. But that's the thing that would change everything.
And when you've got the nation's number one quarterback on the board, Mike Yurcich's presence on this staff, obviously pretty vital getting through National Signing Day as well. He's clearly attached at the hip with James Franklin, was a priority target. I will say the one thing from a staff standpoint, you know, if losses rack up here down the stretch, you're going to have some conversations, some difficult ones if you're James Franklin, about who's staying, who's going, and why. And when staff changes happen, they normally coincide with that early signing period. Sometimes, quite sadly, they happen a few days after the signing period, after the kid has already put pen to paper. But that's a realistic thing about this. The ramifications of losses are terrible on the recruiting trail for more reasons than perception. It's because all of a sudden the trust and stability that you see within the facility, and you say, well, that guy's not going anywhere until he becomes a head coach or until he gets promoted from another program. If guys are leaving for other reasons, then that starts to, you know, potentially shake up the security that you have with guys who have been committed for a long time.
And I will reiterate something you said in the open here, or the open to this question, is that they built this class coming off of a 4-5 year that was really ugly. And so I think that helps you in terms of, these guys have seen poor results. They've seen you kind of turn it around and gotten that optimism going. So, and on top of that, this class is kind of built from the inside out, a lot of Pennsylvania kids in this class. So that certainly helps with that. So I think Penn State's got a lot going for it in terms of keeping that 2022 class together. But yeah, the uncertainty with Franklin is something that will be the elephant in the room until, you know, something more clear happens on that front.
All right, well, we've got a few more days to get into this matchup that's ahead of us on Saturday, one that, as we said, looks tremendously different than it did just a few weeks ago, or just a few days ago, with number 20 Penn State traveling to play number 5 Ohio State. We'll have you covered after that game as well with some post-game coverage. But heading into it, stay with us here. A couple more episodes coming your way on game week number 8 of this 2021 season. For Sean Fitz and producer Lance Glenn, I'm Tyler Donahue. Thanks, as always, for listening to the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.